Aman, thank you for joining us today. Can you start just by giving us an overview of Radical? Who are you? What do you do? And what are your aims and mission?
Thank you, Gillian, for having me. And hello to everyone from Dubai, where I'm tuning in from. So Radical, we are a strategic innovation studio. We are based in Dubai, as well as in London. I suppose our grand mission, if I can use that phrase, is to challenge the normal. We work with leaders who want to challenge that by way of looking at domain level challenges, whether they are things like education, healthcare, climate, gender issues. And the goal there is to, I suppose, provoke and challenge the status quo for as we see a radically better future at multiple levels, whether it's the individual level, organizational level, or even the global levels. And I suppose as a summary to that, what is important for us is that we, have a very strong, I would say, experimental mindset. So the work that we do begins with an inquiry, a discovery process to understand what's happening in a domain or a sector, but it kind of slowly gravitates towards figuring how can we reimagine that? And most importantly, how can we prototype certain initiatives or experiments that can help us bring some of those, what we see, crazy or transformative ideas to life?
Well, can you give us some examples about how you do bring those to life? What are the projects that you deliver or have delivered that would showcase what Radical does?
So I can, reflect back to some work we did for Rezone, for example, a few years ago, where they were trying to establish whether the service levels for their tenants were being affected by stakeholders they worked with. Because, as a free zone, they're, in a sense, the gateway to services that other entities provide. So they're trying to establish what the, I suppose, leverage points were and how they could provide a better level of innovation and so on to their own organization, to their tenants. So we established, through, again, a research process and engagement with various stakeholders, a portfolio, I would say, of about 30-odd different experiments to pursue. So, for instance, there was a conversation about how does financing get challenged for SMEs, for instance, who are a tenant mix. So we proposed the idea of setting up a very specific stock market type mechanism for SMEs who operate in the free zone. And I suppose if you go back 3 years ago when we were in a pre-COVID environment and where things weren't as virtual as they are today, we also, I suppose, thought about the idea of, well, if you're looking at a free zone again, which is a very physical brick and mortar system, an economic zone, the notion of doing a virtual marketplace in those days seemed novel, at least through a government organization. So that was another, initiative that we had floated at that time. And, these ideas, often when we get into the work of implementation, our role very often, I would say, stops at the experimentation stage. And the idea of then scaling it out is left to the sponsor, the stakeholder, because that requires a far more grander engagement, if that makes sense.
Now, as you say, this was all in a pre-COVID environment. So how has your focus shifted since the pandemic? Has your work changed or had to adapt in any way?
I think, it's obviously a cliched statement right now that, what was supposed to happen in 10 years probably happened in 10 months, and in some cases, 10 weeks. So a lot of the issues that we'd been debating and discussing with our clients in the last 5 years around, system changes that required multiple actors to collaborate, whether these are actors that knew each other, let's say likely allies, or actors that did not know each other, which are the unlikely allies. And that sort of collaborative efforts and system engagement across multiple levels got accelerated. So our work then responded to that by looking at how can we support that. And whether it's in the area of education, whether it's looking at how cities are being redesigned or reimagined to serve a different stakeholder, type of stakeholder audience from a behavior perspective. And of course, things around building more viable cities, which again connects to the notion of health, well-being, and of course, climate. So, from an operational perspective, I suppose you could say that we, of course, started doing things more virtually and got more and more creative with that. Beyond just running a simple Zoom show, how can we actually have more interactive conversations, whether it's using, like Miro boards, for example, running workshops, which are far more engaging than someone just simply going into breakouts and trying to replicate what would probably have been a similar experience pre-COVID, or I suppose will probably remain, pre-COVID, which was very in-person. And so I think there was probably, summarize that, there are probably two levels of changes. One was the kind of topics that we were discussing. They got a far more higher level of urgency attached to them, and stakeholders were keen on trying to find solutions because they seemed a bit, I would say, lost would probably be a strong term, but they weren't sure what would be the best, you know, pathways going forward. And of course, that was at the external level. At the internal level, how we operated to serve that need.
Now, obviously, COVID has had a major impact on the education sector. What do you think are now the biggest challenges that the sector faces today and moving forward?
Well, I mean, you know, someone, a friend of mine, sent me an image actually 2 nights ago on WhatsApp, and you know, she showed how certain sectors had changed. So if you look at how people communicated 50 or 100 years ago, compared to how they communicate right now with mobile phones and devices. And then you kind of have a similar image of a classroom from 100 to 200 years ago. The world of education hasn't really changed a lot at the, you know, well, let's say macro level in the last two centuries, which is kind of remarkable and I would say shocking at the same time. So the issues that we see that we see going forward will probably be amalgamation of things that were always there in the past, things related to equity, equality, quality of education and access, financing, for instance, but now being in a sense amplified by the what I suppose is being referred to right now as a generational catastrophe, right? You know, the sort of populations that have been deprived of learning, whether it's because schools closed or whether the technology and the connectivity wasn't strong enough to support an online learning environment, or whether it was the poverty that got accelerated, unfortunately, which led to children being pulled out of school, even if opportunities were able to send them to school. So I think at the moment, there is an amalgam of issues out there, which unfortunately, there is no single answer to. And in the work that we've been doing in the last 1.5 years or so for a global summit, what we've realized is that we have to take a very multi-pronged approach. With several tiers attached to it, multiple stakeholders who come in from different perspectives. So there's an appreciation of both the complexity that we are facing with, but also the nature of solutions that will require far more collaborative effort going forward.
Now, you mentioned this collaborative effort moving forward. Is that how the industry overcomes these challenges the sector's facing? Is that the best way forward?
Well, Julian, I'd be, I guess, being very wishful if I say that was the case. I mean, in the past, you know, again, in the last 18 months, the first 12 months of some work that we were doing from a discovery process perspective, we had multiple conversations with stakeholders, you know, whether it was one-on-one interviews with ministerial level audiences. We had discussions at the grassroots level, whether it was teachers and students. And remarkably, the lack of conversation that was prevalent was remarkable. I mean, we were finding that people were, in a sense, seemingly having sort of a self-evident nature of the work they were doing, that, you know, we are self-righteous, that sort of, this is the best way to answer it. And the openness to embrace solutions from, let's say, the other end of the table probably wasn't as great as it is right now. At least there's an appreciation that is required to carve out better solutions. So I think that in the past would have been an option, perhaps, or luxuries to some sort of situations. But now, I mean, you know, we've been discussing with stakeholders some sort of initiatives, and as we refer to them, you know, experiments for how we can build better sort of programs and solutions for navigating a post-COVID environment. And clearly, you know, without doubt, the better options that are emerging are ones where we have multiple, more varied and diverse allies on the table who potentially have both the motivation, the enthusiasm, and of course, the willingness to collaborate going forward.
Now, one of those allies you talk about is Dubai Cares. Tell us about that partnership and what projects are you working on together?
So, you know, I always believe that the work that we do at Radical, we love working with those organizations that do not just invest in a project financially, but actually invest in courage. And Dubai Cares happened to be one of those clients who had this desire to, you know, shift, rewire, and reimagine the global narrative when it comes to education. So about, I would say probably it was September 2019. So this is, I was actually in New York at that time. And, you know, we began discussing a global summit that Dubai Cares was working to organize with Expo 2020 and the Ministry of, you know, Cooperation over here in Foreign Affairs in the UAE called Rewired, which was due to happen in the early part of 2021. And then, of course, because of COVID, it got moved to December 21. And, you know, of course, there's a typical, let's say, archetype of a summit that you can imagine when people get, you know, convened together, whether it's topics and speakers and panels and everything else that you can have, you know, in a typical conference setting. And Dubai Care said, well, that's great. We need to do that, but we also need to do something else. We really need to take this opportunity, let's call it catalytic moment in time when people would have gathered in a major global exposition at Expo 2020 and try to have dialogues that probably haven't happened before, try to bring allies together that haven't happened, you know, come together in the past, and not just amplify the good work that's already happening. Because, you know, obviously what I've said so far should not be suggesting in any case that there is an excellent work already underway. So to amplify that so that more people know about it, and how can we sort of scale that to more areas and more regions in a contextually appropriate manner, but at the same time incentivize, you know, new partnerships and new ways of supporting the needs of different stakeholders, particularly the Global South. So the work that we are doing, I think there probably are, I would say, multiple things that we've done with them in the last year and a half. You know, we work with them to ideate and help deliver a virtual version of a global summit called Rewire X. This happened in December 2020. And the other work that was linked to something that we are now referring to as Rewire Talks. So again, what we realize in our research is that a lot of the conversations that were happening to reform and transform education were not happening with stakeholders who were getting affected, whether it's the students, the children, the parents, and often the teachers as well. So the Rewire Talks initiative was really an initiative whereby we provided a sort of a high-level playbook in a DIY style to audiences who wanted to have a dialogue on questions that they had been discussing in their offices, in their homes, on their dinner tables. And we said, look, why don't you have that conversation, record that in some way you find fit, video or audio, and upload that to a portal so we can appreciate what the nuances and the insights. And that's been a brilliant process. So that's another, I would say, lovely experience that we've had that's very untypical of a conference effort. And then moving into this year, we've moved into a couple of areas that are, I would say, broadly being referred to as provocations. And I can elaborate on that in a bit. So the provocation strategy on how can we provoke audiences to, you know, imagine a different set of pathways for different sort of streams in education. And that was being housed, as we call it, in a structure that we are loosely referring to as a rewired sandbox. That, as again, if you can imagine, you know, how children play with sandboxes, they have things to fiddle around with, and it's always sort of, you know, transforming and is flexible. And that was the whole idea. How do you provide this environment and this ecosystem where people have the freedom, the flexibility, and the confidence to try out things and not worry about failure? So that's our focus for this year with the work that we're doing with the bikers.
Now, you mentioned there the rewired provocations. Can you go into that in a little more detail for us? And how is it, do you hope, going to revolutionize the education sector? And how can everyone get involved?
Yeah, so I think let's maybe, you know, taking a step back, because the word provocations may have, I guess, many connotations attached to it. So I would say first thing is to probably say, you know, when we say provocations, we are in a sense setting out statements or questions that provoke a certain type of inquiry or tease a certain type of alternative future that's possible led by that question. So for instance, if you're exploring the connection between education and nature, you know, how can we imagine a world where we are being educated with nature being on the same, at the same playing field versus us sort of, you know, not being subservient to it. You know, responsible, you know, like you've seen initiatives probably in the past where so-called, you know, forest schools or green schools, but really kind of having a very stronger connection between what's happening in the world of nature and environment and also what's happening in the school environment. Similarly, with, you know, if you look at well-being, for instance, not just well-being being an output of that school experience, but actually being a centerpiece of that. So these provocations that we've set out do not start off by saying we know the answer. They're saying here's a question that needs to be answered in many different ways, and let's explore what those answers are. And then we kind of set out possible ideas to bring them to life, which we refer to as experiments or, you know, let's say innovative initiatives. So I, to your question of, you know, what do we hope we can achieve? I mean, in the next 6 months and obviously beyond that as well, because I believe this work should not stop at the summit itself, which is simply a point, a moment in time, is that we have had people who would have, you know, prototyped certain ideas that probably are in discussion right now across multiple realms. You know, we've identified six broad provocations through a very structured process of feedback and insights and iteration with multiple stakeholders. And these six provocations are, you know, kind of mushroomed into 50 experiments, which are now being, again, filtered down to, you know, anywhere between, you know, 5 to 10, perhaps, that can be, you know, tried out in the next 6 months and so, to kind of get a certain feedback on what is resonating with audiences, what's working, so that by the time we come to the summit in December, we're able to demonstrate that, look, this was a crazy initiative, but here's some, like, light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, like, I remember one of my mentors saying that, you know, the day before something is a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea, right? So in the same sense as well, you know, from our perspective, these ideas may be seen to be kind of crazy or revolutionary or transformative, but they required some, I would say, committed actors to try out what's the possible way forward in case someone's committed to doing it. And I think that's what we hope, that in the next 3 to 6 months and hopefully beyond that as well, that these actors are able to not just prototype these ideas, but also find ways to bring them to life in multiple environments, not just the, let's say, global South or only the global North or in Africa or in the Middle East, but, you know, find out the most nuanced, I would say, amplifications of the ideas in different settings. So everyone finds what's appropriate for them versus being kind of, you know, following a copy-paste model, which often was the case, unfortunately, in the past. You know, what's worked in, let's say, in a certain place, I'm not going to take, name countries right now, but, you know, what has worked well in a place in Europe, for example, or what has worked well in Asia, and say, well, let's try to copy that and see, you know, how it can work. But, you know, just like we know in organizational settings, culture does not travel if a CEO leaves one entity and moves to another entity. Similarly, you know, education systems don't travel as well. They need to be contextualized. And hopefully these experiments that we'll be running in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months will give us insights on how we can help move the agenda and the baton forward to some of these ideas that, you know, have been on the drawing board for many years.
Now, let's finish on the Global Education Summit that you're talking about, this rewired event taking place in December during Expo 2020. What part will Radical be playing in this summit?
Well, I mean, we've been, if I can use the word, threatened to be provided with a room that will be called the Radical Room. And I think that will probably have either the highest attendance or the weakest attendance, depending on how, I guess, the mindset of people walking to that summit. But from our perspective, there are... you know, I would say multiple, if I can use the way, possibilities there. You know, one, of course, we'd love to showcase what's happened in the last, I would say, 24 months by the time the summit happens, and whether it's from a, you know, data perspective, engagement with stakeholders, what their feedback has been, and some of the results from these ideas, I would say, or some of the outputs from these ideas. So that would be one thing that we hope to demonstrate. And then I would say more important than that is this whole notion of how do you figure out that the work that we've done in the last 21 months, we engaged, let's say, X stakeholders. At the summit, there'll be, you know, over 2,000 people in attendance, assuming, you know, COVID remains on our side, let's put it this way. And of course, a lot more people attending virtually. So we'd like to, you know, build a bigger movement around this. And our role there would be to kind of, you know, get people into dialogues so we can appreciate how we can expand the realm of possibilities when it comes to, you know, these ideas, and probably see how we can improve them. And so that would be, I would say, another key focus of our work. How can we bring more people into the journey? And last but not least, I would say something that we've been thinking a lot about is, you know, what's the legacy of this summit? You know, what has to continue beyond the summit, beyond us announcing, or beyond Dubai Cares announcing another summit, which is, I guess, is the usual thing that organizers do. And that legacy work is something that we have still not resolved what would be the best way to do it. I mean, it'll probably have a resonance with the provocations work and the discoveries we'll make in the next several months. But that would be the third aspect of our, I would say, presence at Radical's, let's say, space or slots in December. That, you know, what is the way forward when it comes to keeping the light burning for these ideas?
Finally and briefly, Aman, what are your hopes for this event? What do you hope can come out of Rewired?
Oh, that's a big question. I don't know whether we can answer that as in a minute or a few minutes, but I would say I would love to have people in the room discussing things that they have in the past only discussed with themselves in their own bedrooms or in their own offices, but have never had the courage to explore as a possibility with others. So that would be, you know, a grand aspiration, if I can call it. How can we engineer and identify and co-create new partnerships that probably have never been built before in the past between stakeholders who have never sat on the same table? To me, that would be a huge win because that's part of the challenge I find in education, that stakeholders who would have so much to gain from each other really don't even know that they can collaborate with someone else or do not want to collaborate. So to the extent that can be incentivized and be realized, I'd love to see that. So that would be one piece. And number two is have more voices there. I'd love to see a broader audience participate, not the usual, if I can, the same old presence of stakeholders. But, you know, how can we have a more wider selection of voices, both virtually and in person, whether it's from a youth perspective, whether it's from a teacher's perspective, whether it's from a non-education sector perspective. You know, let's have people from the world of transportation there. Let's have people from the world of course, environment there. Let's have people from another sector that's never been thought of before, that is, you know, mobility. And get those people as well from multiple levels in that. So I'd love to see that, like, out of the 2,000, let's say, people there in attendance, if 1,000 are not from education, that to me would be just a dream come true in many ways. Because the results, at this point, we can't even imagine what that would bring, but that's probably what the beauty is.
Some really thought-provoking ideas. I'm Anne Merchant, the co-founder and chief provocateur of Radical. Thank you very much indeed.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Why not click subscribe so you can be informed when the latest next individual podcast or podcast mini-series from FE News are going to be released.